All right, it's Liam. I want to thank everyone at the Oasis Podcast, as you were.
Welcome back to the Oasis Podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. I'm your handsome host, James, and I'm joined by Richard. How are you doing?
Hello, how are you doing? I'm good. How are you?
We're very good. We're all good. All good, thank you. We're not miserable like we've been talking about before we press record. We're very happy and smiley and providing a wonderful service to our beloved listeners. So today we were going to talk about, well, there's a couple of news bits I suppose we can touch upon. But the other thing I was going to talk to you about, Richard, because you famously wrote the only book that covers the entire history of Oasis, some might say, available on Amazon and various other places. And there's been a couple of books flying around recently, and obviously we're coming up to Christmas, so you tend to get these book releases. So I thought, you know, one thing we've never done is actually just talked about the different books about Oasis that are out there on the market. And obviously you writing the definitive book on Oasis. Well, you pretty much read them all, I think, didn't you?
I did. Yeah. It's a long time ago now because scarily I finished them, I'd say 4 years ago. And obviously I was doing kind of a lot of the readings. I was going on to that. So some of them I've not looked at for 5-6 years. But and obviously a lot of them have come out recently. But since then, should I say? But the kind of the staple ones like. For me, and I think this still kind of stands really, was Tony's book, The Truth, because first of all, that offered a good alternative take on things. You know, we can get into the semantics of how true it was and so on and so forth, but for an alternative take, that was kind of insightful. And obviously, it was the first and to date only one written by anyone involved, well, in the band. The two Paolo Hewitt books were great. You know, I think if you ever ask anyone about Oasis books, those would be the first two that come up. Justifiably, you know, they're both great getting high in for every people. Yeah, wonderful ones. And then since then, there's kind of been a bit of a drip period, a kind of consolidation. Maybe I'm just noticing it more because it's since some might say come out. But I've noticed there kind of a lot more come. You know, I mean, I think you'd probably say the definitive one now was Supersonic, which, you know, takes quotations from people involved in the band and kind of makes a narrative out of it, which is a great idea, I think. I think that's a really good idea for a book.
Idea, isn't it? Yeah.
And you know, 5 years after the film was released, perfectly logical as to why they do that. But that one is, to be fair, that is the most insightful. I mean, for the purists, similar to the film, really. For the purists, if you know the story, there's not a huge amount of stuff there because, especially Noel and Liam, you know, Noel's a great raconteur, as is Liam. Slightly less, you know, on slightly less important matters. But with Noel, it's kind of like you query how much he necessarily remembers. Probably remembers less or calls less than like super fan geeks like us do. But you know, stunning visually, beautiful book, and probably not going to say the most definitive one so far because obviously we know what that is. But certainly the best one for anyone, you know, coming into the band that you'd want, you know, associated with the band, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that those ones you've touched upon there, I'd say are like the key ones. You know, I asked on Twitter what people thought, and obviously those were sort of the ones that were coming up. I think that it's funny when you sort of look at them, and I've sort of done a list. I looked on Amazon. I just searched for Oasis in Amazon. Obviously, it brings up a load of crap that's nothing to do with the band. But what you tend to have is the ones that came out in the rise of Oasis. So I suppose that was the first wave, you know, and they would tend to, you had a lot of like the unofficial biography and things like that, that were sort of, you know, a few kind of the sort of press releases thrown together, you know, the standard photos you've seen a lot, you know, a lot of those came out and were in HMV and stuff, you know, so a lot of the people listening to this will have got them when they were buying up their singles and things like that, because that was just, you know, you had to have it, you know, you had to have it. If it had Oasis on it, you were going to buy it. So there was quite a few of those kicking around at the day. You had like Oasis, Lee Henshaw. Relatively early one was Oasis, definitely Tim Abbott. So Tim Abbott did a good one back in the day. And obviously Tim as them. Yeah, I think the key thing with Tim is that he did a lot of the video recording that has then turned up in Supersonic. We've been waiting for Tim actually to sort of to do something with the rest, because, you know, we know he's got a treasure trove of stuff. But yeah, that's a good one from those early days. And then we have, then in sort of 1997, you get Paul Gallagher's Brothers, which you didn't mention, but that's like a really good one. Co-written with Terry Christian, which is
quite random, isn't it? He was a bit of an authority on Oasis, I think, in the early days, just maybe by his management associations. Although he said a few things on Twitter, I can't remember exactly, but he said a couple of things on Twitter. I'm like, I know that's inaccurate. I know that's wrong. But it's kind of, I guess it was quite a bit. I mean, Paul was obviously quite famous, but he's got more famous since. Do you know what I mean? Since the interest in the Gallagher Brothers have grown. I think maybe in the white heat of the 90s, it was more like those two. So maybe a bit of association with Terry Christian to kind of help him, or maybe just to write the majority thing, and he would maybe do the ghostwriting. Don't know what happened with there. But yeah, that's great. I mean, it's more about the Gallagher Brothers, though, isn't it? It's less than the band. Yeah, as obviously the name would suggest. But yeah, it's really. I forgot to mention that one. Similarly, I forgot to mention Ian Robertson's as well, which I'm sure you'll bring up as well, which were similarly like those close to the band. There's some tales that you hadn't heard. Sorry, yeah, I interrupted. Anyway, go on.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So Ian Robertson's is really good. I mean, obviously, I've had Ian on the pod. There's some really good stories there. Although I think he has got a bit of a... I suppose it's always difficult. Whenever you have these books, you know, obviously you sort of... You can never 100% kind of talk about what actually went on those days, unless you had a video going or a phone going or what a phone. Jesus, they didn't have phones, couldn't record back then. But that's one of the things I think Paolo's books are brilliant, is it feels like he's literally memorized it. When he writes out like the conversations that were had and stuff, whether he did secretly record them or not, I don't know, but it feels like he's got their voice perfectly. You know what I mean? Whereas then when you get to like, definitely Ian Robertson's book, also a bit Tony's as well, it feels like very much that's their recollection, you know, and it probably didn't play like that. You know, they're the hero of their own story, if you know what I mean. And yeah, I think there's definitely quite a bit of that with Ian's book, although it is fascinating. Obviously, he was the tour manager, and so it's all about, you know, him being out on the road with them and the japes they got up to. Another one that came out around that time is Chris Hutton's book, Don't Look Back in Anger, which I think is really interesting. Obviously, it's like the best, it's the only real kind of document we have of the sort of the pre-Gallagher years and then the early, very early stuff, which is really fascinating to me. I love all that stuff. So to hear about them doing these for very early gigs with the drum machine and things like that, I think is fantastic. And one of the things I like about his book as well is that while it hasn't got... because he was only there for such a short amount of time, it's like, well, how can you really drag this out to be a full book? And so what it tends to be is it's interspersed with chapters on different key Manchester bands as well, which I think works really nicely, actually. I think that those individual chapters are interesting in their own right. And as I said, and it does then kind of build the picture, because that band, The Rain, or you know, what the various incarnations, was inspired by The Smiths and Joy Division and these people. So as it sort of tells the story of them coming through, it makes sense to touch on those. So yeah, I think that's an interesting one. And as I said, it's a shame that Chris Hutton's kind of disappeared out of the limelight now. I did talk, you know, I met him at Shine On a few years ago, and he was a lovely, lovely guy, but just not interested at all in having anything to do with Oasis. So yeah, but it's a good one.
Yeah. I think the other one to kind of mention from the early years is the Paul Ashby book, which, you know, is very questionable. And if I'm honest, I kind of regret including him in, some might say, to be honest, because I think I probably underestimated quite what a blagger he was. But, you know, this, you kind of think, I think it has been established he did have some association with them. You know, a lot of the tales are quite wild, and, you know, none of the band members have any kind of, don't want to be associated with him for various reasons. You do sense he's trying to, you know, make a bit of a quick buck off them, and his behaviour since has kind of demonstrated that. I think the OCG, I think Carl could probably vouch for that as well. It's a good read, you know. It's a fun read of a book, but I wouldn't put any merit in what he says. I think he's probably trying to treat that as quasi-fiction. But it's a laugh, you know. It's a good bit of light reading, but I wouldn't put too much truck in it.
Well, personally, if Paul is listening, the big one, I think every single word of it is true, and I think it's the greatest book ever written. And Paul, I think you're a wonderful person. Another Paul that we haven't mentioned is Paul Mather. His book, Take Me There, came out in 96, which was another one of those like really key kind of tellings of that period. And I know that's a big one for people. It's one I never had, to be honest. And so it's one I've definitely read over the years. I think I borrowed it off my mate. But yeah, another key one. It's telling the same story. Obviously, everyone was cashing in around this time on the rise. Yeah, and then so I suppose those are the key ones that came out in kind of that 96, 97 period. You got Daniela Suave, Was There Then in 1998, which is another one I never got, but I know that that's been mentioned by a few people. And then I suppose you then get into, there's been various bits and pieces over the years, but what I find really interesting is that we're now obviously in this period that we weren't in the 90s of the ability to self-publish. Some might say was done with a publisher, and I'm really pleased that that's, you know, the way we ended up doing it, because, you know, the quality is just different. You know, as much as, you know, some self-published books are great and they look okay, it just doesn't ever quite look. You can feel whether it's the quality of the paper or just the print settings or so. I don't know what it is, but I can always spot a self-published book versus a proper published book. And so, you know, I think you know, I don't know, financially, maybe it would have been slightly better to go self-published, but I think having that published one, you know, it just does. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. Like, I can kind of spot a self-published book when it does come across, you know, no matter how much the intent's gone in. And it's just, there's no one specific thing, is it? It just feels quality. I mean, I remember getting the proof copy of Some Might Say and going, my God, that's so heavy. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was a hefty book, and that kind of, in simplistic terms, like, well, heavier remains quality, you know. And I think, yeah, I am very, like you say, I think we probably could have made more money self-publishing, but by the same token, we wouldn't have necessarily had the reach that This Day Music kind of had. I mean, it's still a little bit, I'm still yet to see it in a shop, you know, but then we wouldn't necessarily got that from self-publishing, I think, because we went to a kind of music specialist publisher. That's kind of the price of paper in that. But yeah, I think maybe I'm just old-fashioned, but I always had in my head when I was doing something myself, I was like, right, I want this to be a book, and I want it to be a proper book with a publisher and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, that's, as I said, probably an old-fashioned point of view. I've since self-published a couple of books, and probably made a little bit, well, not as much money as some might say. But then that has its own travails, you know. I mean, I had quite a lot of problems with Some Might Say. People who bought the first draft or the first edition will notice there's a lot of kind of errors in it, and that they're not like they're not factual errors, well, borrowing one or two, but they're like glitches. And that came because it kind of had to get uploaded to a different system to transfer all the words, and then it came back and it was all cockeyed. And I went back and forth with it and said, no, this needs to be done. And then unfortunately, the publishers, bless them, printed the penultimate draft rather than the final draft that I'd gone through with a fine tooth comb. So there were quite a lot of problems within that. But I think that's, you know, those issues you have with publishers, with publishing something on a mass scale. The same problem with self-publishing, there's so many more kind of hoops to jump through as well. So I see the pros and cons of both. But yeah, like you say, I'm very glad we did, despite the initial run being a little bit of a cock up. I'm very glad we did go to a publisher, for some might say, because it just adds a bit of weight to have it published with it. And, you know, look at This Day Music's kind of portfolio. They've done books with Sean Ryder, you know, they've done books with, or official books with INXS, or with INXS, OMD, you know, it just added a real weight. And to see in that catalogue never stops being pleasing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely. We'll be right back. Very true. And there's some brilliant ones. If you look on Amazon, there's some fantastic ones. So there's a bunch here, like that clearly, I don't know if they're AI generated. I mean, they came out in like 2021, so I don't know if that was sort of available back then. But they're clearly sort of either AI generated or they've sort of been kind of copied and pasted and then translated into different languages. But there's three I found. One by Donald Judah, one by Shannon Borsa. I don't know who they are, but they all sort of feel similar. And they've like, so the titles are The Oasis Rock Band, a group of five lads from Manchester, music styles of Oasis Band. The Story of Oasis Rock Band, The Story of Northern Solidarity and Indie Rock and Roll, Failures of Oasis Band. And Everything About English Rock Band of Oasis, Take on the World with Brand of Rock and Roll, Facts of Oasis.
I mean, my immediate jump from that is, are they foreign? Are they non-Anglo-Saxon books, possibly, or non-English books? That's my immediate take from that. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be inspired to buy them based on that, I've got to say.
You don't think so? I kind of am inspired to buy them just because I wonder, they'd be entertaining. I don't know what the hell is going on there, but yeah, I love that. Another one, there's a guy called Primo or Primo Scagnetti, which to me sounds like a mafia boss name or like a 1930s boxing champion. I don't know. But he's done some brilliant ones. So he does, these are clearly self-published. I don't know if he's Italian. They've been sort of reset back into English. But there's one, he's called E is for Eyeball. There's one called I is for Invisible Sun. And there's one, is F is for Freaky Teeth. And what he does, he just goes A to Z talking about different songs by obviously Oasis and then and Liam and Noel, and it just sort of makes you realize, like, and that the covers, yeah, guys, look these up because they're weird and hilarious. But yeah, it just, you just think, well, fair play, like, you have got this ability to just go out there, write a book and self-publish it on Amazon. So yeah, I mean, I don't think it's going to be taken on kind of Paolo Hewitt's not going to be shaking in his boots, but yeah, you know, it's out there.
Yeah, it lives, and you know, this. Yeah, I mean, I'd be fascinated to see their sales figures, but you know, this, you know, for him to have done a few more than one suggests that he thinks he's obviously onto a good thing. So, yeah, good luck to him.
Yeah, there's been another sort of subset, I suppose, is like the photo based ones. Now, these are ones I've never got, you know, because number one, they tend to be very expensive, and number two, like, I'm just not bothered. I'm not a big sort of, you know, having a coffee table book type person. I'm not really that arsed, but you know, Michael Spencer Jones did Supersonic, the Oasis photographs, which is very expensive. I think it's up on like 60 quid or something. And you know, and I've never had Michael on the show, and yeah, and he did, I think there was something like, I offered to have him on the show, but he said, okay, that's fine, but I'll come on, but you have to buy a copy of my book first, and I can't give you a discount. It's 65 quid. And I was like, okay, I'll come back to you, Michael. And I never did. I just thought, come on, like, you know, I'll happily promote your book and have a chat, and because obviously he's been a big part of the Oasis story, but no, I didn't think that was particularly cool. Did you get that one?
I have a copy of it, not a physical copy, but I have a PDF of it.
Okay.
It came my way.
Yes.
And Michael didn't see much money for it.
No. Well, and he's he's got some money out of you anyway, so that's fine. So the one sort of official book, if you look up Noel Gallagher on Amazon as an author, the Any Road Will Get Us There If We Don't Know Where We're Going, from 2018 with him, and it's obviously Sharon Latham takes the photos. Now, I gave that away. I bought it. I think you can get it for like a quid these days in sort of CEX, you know, anywhere you can find it. I don't think it's particularly sought after. I had a copy, I think I bought for like 5 quid, and I chucked it out when we did the quiz on stage at the was it the Astoria, the O2 Islington.
Yeah, isn't it? I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, and I was like chucking things out into the crowd if they got Oasis questions right. I think you got them all right, I think. But
most of them, yeah.
Most of them.
I think, right. I don't recall getting any prizes, though.
I think you did. I think I was chucking things out into the audience. Maybe.
You were, but I don't know that I got any prizes.
Oh, I don't know. I was, well, you don't need any more.
I think I think you were like, oh, you know enough anyway. I'll give it to someone else. It's like,
yeah, yeah, that sounds
patron, right.
Yeah. So I don't know who got my copy of that book, but anyway, it's out there. Yeah, I mean, it was fine. It was like, you know, Sharon's obviously a brilliant photographer, and you did get some text as well, sort of talking about the tour, which was interesting. But yeah, once again, I don't think it's particularly essential. And then there's other ones, like there's the recent Jill Firmanofsky, Nebworth one, which obviously she's an amazing photographer, you know, but yeah. Yeah, once again, it's just not, I'm not that bothered about those big fancy photo books, to be honest.
I kind of am. I've got the Jill Firmanofsky thing, and it's not something I'm ever going to, you know, it's a coffee table book. So the point of it is, you know, you don't particularly read it that much. You just have it. And you kind of read through it once and scan through pictures. I mean, I think I sat down and read it in like an hour. But it's got, you know, if you're into photography books, it's beautiful. Similarly with the Sharon Lady book. I mean, I went to the launch night of that. It was 2018. It was round the corner from King's Cross. I want to say near the Guardian offices, like kind of Euston-y way, actually, I think. I forgot where it was anyway. And Noel was there for that. So that was kind of, that's my kind of abiding memory of that. Similarly, you know, it's a tour book. You know, it's like it's some great photography, it's some great artwork in it, but you know, it's kind of an expanded version of what you get if you've got a tour program. It's kind of that type of thing. And what was it, about £30, I think it was at the time. And yeah, really nice to have. I think they're great for the kind of super fans to have. But yeah, I don't, it sits on my shelf, I don't really refer to it much, but I will one day. But yeah, photography books are a funny one. You know, they're you can see. It's a different type of thing. I buy a book to, you know, to learn, generally, but the photography books are kind of a bit more luxury, kind of boutique-y type of items, really. But yeah, as I say, those two are gorgeous.
No, absolutely. And coming to that, I mean, there's a couple of books that are out either now or coming out shortly. So I'll be talking to Karamdeep Sahota very soon, and Get on the Roller Coaster Oasis in New Zealand, March 1998. I've got in my hands here, and we'll be talking to Kaz about that. Yeah, this is great. What I really like about this is it's so in depth. You know what I mean? We're literally focused here on just how Oasis were perceived in New Zealand. So it starts out, you have kind of the first sort of, and he's done proper research. You know, most people, I get the impression that a lot of these sort of self-published books, they're just Googling, you know what I mean? They're just finding what they can on the internet, and that's about it. Whereas, you know, it looks like Kaz has actually gone to like the National Public Library of New Zealand and done hours and hours of research. And I know you've been involved in, you were helping him out with it, were you? Or you've been involved in it in some way. Is that the case?
Yeah, Kaz actually kind of, I think if my memory's right, he kind of approached me, a couple of years ago now, and said he was writing this book, and was there any kind of help I could give? And I was like, happy to help, you know, happy to do any kind of proofreading for you. So I've kind of been there, I don't know how many drafts I've got, so I've kind of been there from, I don't know about the beginning, but certainly most of it. And every time he sent me a version, like, it had taken another step up. You know what I mean? He would say, oh yeah, I've gone to the public library, or I've spoken to this person to get a quote. And like, I was in a unique position that I could, you know, see the quality levels really increase every time he sent it to me. I gave him a few kind of tips about, you know, about kind of writing styles and things like that. But yeah, I mean, I made no suggestions about the actual kind of extent of the work he went into, or didn't really suggest anything about in terms of where he could find the information. That's kind of all his and all proper labour of love. And yeah, like you say, I mean, it's forensic, isn't it? I think I use that word in the quote I put on the back, because he very kindly asked me to write a quote for it. But it's you know, it really, really goes into the nitty gritty of what was a handful of gigs in a very, you know, at the fag end of a very specific tour. But he's, you know, the way he's gone into it, like there's as you say, there's a kind of good kind of precursor of kind of setting the scene for it. Loads of quotations from people who were actually there. Yeah, it's as you say, it's the in-depthness of it. I mean, yeah, I doff my cap to it. Even I couldn't have done that when it, looking at some might say. It's how he's managed to get a book, and a big chunky book out of what was a few weeks, is impressive. And yeah, can't recommend it to fans enough.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, anyone in New Zealand, like if you're an Oasis fan, this is so, I mean, imagine that, you know, to have that. If you're an Oasis fan in New Zealand, because like I said, it's not just because that was my concern, because I'd talked to him about it, although I don't get a shout out or a mention, so I'm not happy about that. But yeah, actually, scrap the interview, Kaz, it's not happening. But no, I'm joking. So my concern with it was, you know, and it's because it's the concern that I have over doing kind of lots of like very samey interviews on the podcast, you know, and so people often say, oh, I saw Oasis 6 times, I'd love to talk to you about them. But okay, but what are you really going to add? You know, like, it's how that's often the thing I find is it's like, well, you know, I think that's one of the things the Nebworth film did very well and stuff. It's not just about, oh, and then they came on and did Some Might Say and it was great. You know, there's no many times that you can hear someone say that without actually getting quite dull. And so when you're trying to keep the podcast going, as we have for like over 6.5 years, it's like, well, you've got to get the different stories and you've got to get all the people that were involved. And so that was my concern, was, okay, well, if it's just going to be kind of a collation of people that were there, but they haven't really got a huge amount to say, then what's going to make it interesting? But I think that's the key thing for me is that there are sort of some, you know, really interesting takes from people that were there. But then for me, it is that forensic, like, you know, I said, getting the, all of the reviews he'd done, all of the, you know, getting the reviews, getting the gig, you know, album reviews, getting the gig listing, that sort of stuff. I'm like, because I haven't seen that. You know, that's not stuff that's just out there. If you Google, you know, this is stuff he's physically gone to these records and found. And so as a forensic, you know, Oasis and now analyst myself, although I haven't gone into any public libraries ever to do this sort of stuff. So, yeah. So I was really, really impressed with that. And yeah, so to get that, you know, and like I think I said when it sort of came up on Twitter and I sort of mentioned about having the copy, like, this is what we need. If you've got people that could do that for Japan or for, you know, South America or whatever, brilliant, you know, because that's such a treasure trove of information that's just not out there. You know, it's going to help Some Might Say Volume 2.
Well, I was going to say, it's kind of inspired me to when I do a revised version of Some Might Say, because I definitely will, because I can't even, well, I took off the shelf about, I don't know, 3 or 4 months ago, and it makes me cringe now looking at it. Like, I mean, this is not a great advert, it's still a great book, buy it if you haven't, it's still really good. But I now look at it, I could improve that so much. and I think a lot of that is from what Kaz has done. It's kind of like, yeah, there's a lot more I can kind of go into, like digging out the archives, going into a bit more granular about the reviews and stuff like that. I mean, I've just had a quick look through my emails. He first reached out to me in December 2021, and without going into details of what he asked in the first email, like, he was covering his bases a lot, you know, even in that email. So kind of he set his stall out. He was asking, you know, did you have any issues about licensing, or have any licensing material? Do you have any help from Ignition? Blah, blah, blah. He was like properly, you know, set his stall out. It's been a real kind of labor of love. And I think my copy hasn't arrived yet, but I, from what I can see and what having read the text, like, it's paid off. And yeah, a must have for the fans, as you say, specifically in kind of in New Zealand. And yeah, it's actually, I'm glad I've helped him out, and hopefully in the long term he'll inspire me.
Yeah, absolutely. Another book that's coming up soon, I did hear from the guy called Andrew Rooney, who I think is a patron actually, is, I think it's out this year, is Every Album, Every Song, part of the On Track series. So I've seen that On Track series for other bands, but yeah, as I say, I've that popped up. So yeah, I'd be interested to check that out. You know, I know that's something that sort of we've talked about or we've looked at, kind of, I'd love that. You know, that was the initial plan for what became Some Might Say, was like in Every Song. So yeah, I look forward to that one coming out. And then the other one that's come out or is coming out at the moment is this guy. It's sort of not exactly Oasis, but I thought it was interesting just to touch upon very quickly. This chap, Lee House, who's done this book about, it's kind of a book of poetry and short stories, I believe. I haven't got it. I think you've got it, haven't you? But then taking the inspiration of Noel Gallagher and Noel's songs and then working it through that way. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. So it's what Lee's done is he's kind of taken what he gets from Noel's songs and what he thinks Noel was going through at the time and kind of made, yeah, poems / short stories out of it. It's a very brave book. I'll say that, you know, in terms of the how he kind of lays himself bare, and for that in its own way, it's pretty unique. I mean, again, I kind of heard, I had a bit of help with Lee. Well, or it helps Lee out with it a little bit. And yeah, I mean, it's probably, I think he would admit, it's probably not for everyone. You know, it's because by virtue of the bravery, you know, and some of the way he kind of lays himself bare, and you know, you read his interpretation of the Oasis song or a Noel song, sorry, and you're like, that's not what I get from it at all. But that's, you know, that's the beauty of Noel songs, isn't it? It's supposed to be. He very much says it's kind of open to interpretation, but yeah, it's. I think he's, you know, he's been going great guns with the kind of promotion of it. He was up at City at the weekends selling it, and I think he's going. He's going to be having a pop up store on Noel's tour for most venues, I think. So yeah, certainly worth checking out. I mean, it's by no means in the kind of same parameters as the books we've discussed. It's not, you know, it's not history. It's not one's interpretation. It's not a biography. It's something else entirely. But as I say, you know, kudos for the kind of way he's laid himself bare. I certainly could have done that.
Yeah. No. I know. I sort of did. I said to him, he approached me about coming on the pod, and I sort of said, oh, yeah, but I mean, potentially let me have a look at the thing first, because I just didn't quite get it. I'm like, well, what is this, you know? And I read a few bits and pieces, and I just, yeah, like you said, I just couldn't quite get my head around this. So I sort of thought, well, we'll, yeah, and then obviously it never ended up happening. But anyway, we've talked about it there. So, yeah, so there you go. If you think that's interesting, I'm sure you can check it out. I know he's done a lot with the Oasis Collectors Group, hasn't he? Sort of special bundles, and he did giveaways and things like that. So he did a really good job promoting it. Far better than you do promoting any of your stuff. You don't do
really. Can't be asked, mate. I really can't be asked. Like, it's just, I hate the kind of self-promotion bit. I've been trying to up my activity on Instagram a little bit because X is just fucking nonsense. But it's just effort. It's hard enough listening to a podcast with my voice, let alone seeing my big mug on the interweb. And I just, yeah, I'm more of a kind of like, just do it, get it out there, and then let it do its thing. You know, I but then, you know, it's a part, especially for Lee and these parts and self-publishing. And like, I mean, I got some promotion at the Modern Music Masters one. I was like on BBC Radio Sheffield and stuff. But like, yeah, it's just, I'm just not something I'm comfortable with, which I know is something I need to change. Yeah. But like, yeah, I don't think I've done any promotion for, some might say, for, about 6 months after it came out.
Brilliant. So yeah, that's kind of the Oasis books. I think, I mean, there's a few others really, but you know, if you search on Amazon, you know, there's a Noel Gallagher biography by someone called Lucian Randall. There's Andrew Riley. So I'm friends on Twitter with an Andrew Riley. So I don't know if it's the same person, but he did Andy Riley. He did Oasis Don't We Maybe Here We Are, But There We Were in 2014, like a personal account, sort of a history of Oasis. So I don't know if that was if that's the Andy that is a listener of the podcast. If it is, then give us a shout. And yeah, and then I suppose then you come into like the not necessarily Oasis related, but Britpop related. And quite a few people on Twitter shouted out John Harris, his Britpop book, which is, I think, is the key kind of,
that's,
you know,
the time. That's the definitive
key
time.
Book about Britpop.
Yeah.
So former guest, mild-mannered Max, who is called Paul Laird in real life. He's disappeared. I know he's quite a intriguing figure on social media, and he disappeared quite a lot. I don't know what is his. He appeared on the podcast here a few times. I met him in Edinburgh in the very early days of the pod. It was the one where we talked about Noel's Desert Island Disc Choices. You know, and he was never particularly an Oasis fan, but he was always sort of a pleasant figure. Over the last few years, he sort of got very, very like anti-Oasis and quite aggressively anti-Oasis, and, you know, and sort of digging me out sometimes and digging Britpop memories out and things. And I just sort of thought it was unnecessary, really. But Whether he was just trying to sell his book, I don't know. But yeah, he's disappeared off of social media. So I don't know if there's if he's okay. But yeah, I never read his book on Britpop. To be honest, I sort of, you know, he would just write so much on social media, just sort of banging on about, you know, these sort of quite smaller bands like, you know, Soda and Flamingos and people like that, that I'm not really that interested in. So, you know, so and he had such an anti-Oasis stance. I just sort of thought, well, I'm not really that bothered, really, then if that's the route you're going to go down. But yeah, did you ever read his book?
No, I haven't actually read it. I always meant to, but I haven't got around to it. I mean, one thing since starting writing books is that there's always, like, my thirst for reading music books is, like, never sated. Like, I don't read anything else now apart from music books. So it was kind of on the list, but I never got around to it. Similar to you, I think I was a bit like, you know, good on him for doing it, but it's kind of exploring the kind of the lesser known reaches of Britpop, although I'm sure there's a lot of pulp and blur stuff in there. But it was one person's account. And yeah, I just never got around to it, to be honest. I will one day, I think. I will probably one day read it. But yeah, as I say, to be perfectly honest, it was just other books that I wanted to read first. And that's still the case, really. Like, for example, I'm reading Nick Banks's book, you know, The Jump from Pulp. You know, there's a load more books coming out over this period. And there's, you know, every time I go into Rough Trade, there's always like a £5 book, which I pick up like last week. Biography of the Kinks and stuff like that. So yeah, I will get around to it. So I'm not in a position to comment about it.
Yeah, he likes shampoo apparently, so there you go.
So
yeah, although he's bald as well, so he's no need for shampoo. But
I didn't want to make that joke, but yeah.
There you go, bless him. Right, so, and then the other one that I missed just looking through the list there, which I think is probably one of the more kind of respected and actually analytical ones, is the definitely maybe 33 and a third, Alex Niven, who I had a few messages back and forth with. Actually, I meant to get him on because he was also in a very early version of the band Everything Everything. I think he left after the first couple of singles, but to be honest, so did I. So I think he was in it when I really thought they were brilliant. I thought they sort of kind of, you know, tailed off a bit for me, but I love those first few singles. But yeah, he's a really good writer, and that 33 and a third series is brilliant. I've got quite a few other ones. I've got the Pet Sounds one, I think I've got a couple of other ones as well. Yeah, and I got that one. That's a really nice analytical kind of real good breakdown of that. Yeah, have you got that one?
Have I read that one? I think I might have read that one. I mean, I like, again, like I think I was a bit like, I kind of know all this, really. That sounds bad, but you know, it's the things with what I find with 33 and 3rd series, is that a lot of it's also interpretation as well. So again, because I'm quite a factual person, like I want to know the details. I want to know what the songwriter was doing. I'm not really bothered about what you think about it, which is ridiculous because a good chunk of some might say is about what I think of, well, my interpretations of Oasis back catalogue. But the impression I get in that series is that it varies from book to book. So I've got a few of them. I don't really recall. I think I've read it. I don't own it, so that's always a problem. So I think I might have read it though. Doesn't stick in my head, but you know, that's not that's maybe more reflection on me than it is the book.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, and well, and just to close it out, if you had you know, Desert Island Oasis books, like if the waves are coming to the shore and you can only grab, let's say, three, what would be the three you would grab from all of the Oasis books?
Well, there's three different versions of Some Might Say, isn't there? So there's the original hardback, the second edition hardback, and the paperback. So is that a bit hard? I think Supersonic. I think you'd have to take that, really, because it's got beautiful imagery, and you know, it's from the band's, you know, it's annotation of the interviews that Noel Liam and other people gave for the film, so I think that's pretty valuable. But again, it doesn't kind of cover everywhere. I think if you're looking for a smaller, like an edited version of Some Might Say, really, Modern Music Masters, and I should give a shout out here because obviously I write for that series, Tom's book is quite good because it's you know, it kind of analyzes it against the backdrop of the charts, so it's a good kind of you know, Oasis kind of were very much defined by their kind of chart performance. They kind of began and end with their kind of chart relevance. That's quite good in that respect. What else? I think probably Paolo Hewitt's two books. I think, and sorry not to go against the grain, really. I think those two are pretty invaluable because they're done by a very good writer, you know, who has had a lot of writing chops anyway. You know, he had a unique insight into the band because he was touring with them in the late 90s. So I think probably those three, I would say, but again, nothing kind of post 2000. Yeah, I'll just stick with my three versions. Some might say, fuck it.
Fair enough. Well, yeah, mine, I would say, yeah, obviously your book. I think for me, like genuinely, if I'm talking about, you know, I'm grabbing them from a house fire or something, which three would I grab? Well, obviously some might say, because it's the official Oasis podcast book and being, you know, being involved in it and, you know, and working with you and getting the, you know, getting the publisher meetings and all that sort of stuff. It was brilliant. Yeah, it was that. So that was for the memories, I'd say that would definitely be on there. Plus also the content, you know, as we said, it is the only one that covers the entire history of Oasis from start to finish. And that's madness. Like, why has that not happened? You know, obviously this upcoming Andrew Rooney one will do that, but in the focused on the music, but apparently, but yeah, it's mad that that hasn't happened, you know, and I've covered all of fucking Amazon. I went down very low, like 50, 60 pages worth of books with the word Oasis in the title. So I genuinely don't think there is another one. It is the only one that does well, that.
How can you top perfection?
Exactly. There's no point, is there?
Exactly.
No point. Okay. Yeah, and I would say, yeah, I would grab Supersonic because, once again, I have memories of that one. I was at the launch for that, met Phil Smith, went there with Britpop Memories. Yeah, so that was a lovely evening that I'll always remember. And then my third, I'd say it's tough then because you've got the Paolo Hewitt's books are the best, I would say, but then Tony's one. I think for me, like Tony's one... Yeah. Because obviously I know Tony a little bit as well now from having had him on and met him at the live events. And it's just such good fun. You know, you read that book, that is happily one I can just, I've got it on ebook as well. And so that's just something, if I'm bored on my phone, I'll just go into my Kobo app and just pick a chapter at random. And it's brilliant, you know, because he goes day by day. So yeah, the Tony McCarroll book, definitely. And and then your one obviously has got to be there, hasn't it? All right, that, how much do you owe me for that?
That plug? Yeah. Well, I'll see my next water check.
All right, cool. Well, look, there we go. I think we've covered that thoroughly. News-wise, I suppose the only, it's been a month. I mean, I always hate people that podcasters that apologize for not having done anything for a while, because you know. Because most people don't give a shit, really, unless there's like a, you know, is a regular weekly thing that ties in with your favorite TV show or something, then fine, then you'd want that. But I don't think anyone really cares. I might get one message that would like, or you know, a couple of tweets, hey, I haven't had an Oasis podcast for a while. So I don't think anyone really gives a shit. But still, I suppose because I do tend to do one every 1 or 2 weeks, then when it does go to 3 weeks or 4 weeks like it has been, I always do feel quite bad. But anyway, not much has happened in the Oasis world in the last month. I suppose the only things, the Liam, definitely maybe tour announcement was probably the biggest thing. Now, I haven't got tickets for it. It's one of those that came up. I actually had a sort of a meeting that morning, so I couldn't physically be there to buy them. But to be honest, now I'm not jumping out of my seat excited about that tour. Like I probably will be like on the day when it's sort of like when he's playing and I'm like, oh shit, you know, I'll be trying to desperately get tickets for 200 quid the day before or something. But I don't know. I think, you know, what he's already played every track except for, I think, Shaker Maker and Dixie's Dinner from the album. And then I know he said he's going to do some B-sides. And I know he said, I think he said on Twitter the other day that he's not going to do any solo stuff. It's only going to be definitely maybe in some B-sides from the era. Whether or not he'll still do Wonderwall or still do, you know, Morning Glory as an encore or something, I don't know. But yeah, so I haven't currently got tickets. I was thinking, well, I'll wait and see what else he announces. And then I'll maybe jump on it later. But yeah, did you get tickets and what's your thoughts?
I haven't got tickets. Same as you, I was kind of wasn't available to get them that day. But I'm sure. Well, I know I'll end up going. I've it's going to happen. Yeah, I'm a bit. It did. It was the same as you, really. It kind of left me a bit cold. It was like, you know, if it was a Be Here Now or Standing on the Shoulder of Giants tour, which obviously isn't going to happen, I'd have been a bit more excited because it's, you know, stuff that you haven't heard. But yeah, I was kind of the same as you. I was like, right, well, okay. So yeah, rattling through the tunes. I mean, obviously, Married with Children, he hasn't done that. But and Up in the Sky, I don't think he's done. Could be wrong. And then I suppose the B sides are more exciting for me. I think, see, you know, I mean, watch him do, you know, I Will Believe. Locked up in chains for the rest of my life. There's no one else to blame but me. The start of the day is just the end of the night. I'm feeling like I'm lost at sea. Sometimes it just seems so simple. Which he might do. I mean, I'm working on the presumption he's going to do all of them because he said, I think it was on Twitter yesterday, he said, like, definitely maybe B-sides and I'm the Walrus. So, which obviously was a B-side, whatever. So I'm looking forward to that kind of a bit more. The actual album itself, yeah, I'm kind of like, he was like, oh, Little Emo, can you give a rock and roll star? It doesn't really, you know, I think you've been paying attention for the last six years to his solo career. It's not a huge amount, but, you know, it's an album that deserves the kind of deserves these shows, or any kind of album does. And, you know, they're going to be great. They're going to be nostalgia fests in much the way that a lot of Liam's stuff is. I mean, I think I said on the last podcast, I'm kind of at the point now where I actually prefer hearing his solo material rather than the Oasis stuff. But there'll still be great nights out. You know, I'm a little bit, I really don't like the O2 Arena in London. So I'm a bit fucked off with that. He's not doing, because he said he's not doing any stadium or outdoor shows. And again, that's another thing. Arenas in June. I was a bit unmoved by that when I spoke. Yeah, that didn't really do much for me. But like I say, there'll be great gigs. You know, I will likely be there. I'll be singing my little heart out. I'll be that guy that you hate if you can't hear Liam, because it'd be me singing. I'm more than prepared to do that. And yeah, there'll be great nights out. And that's kind of what Liam's about, isn't it? It's about nights out.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. Yeah, and then the only other the news that I was going to actually do an episode on was that Liam got a dog. Like, Liam got a rescue dog, didn't he? And it was funny. I was like looking at my timeline, I'm like, why am I seeing loads of tweets from like rescue dogs? I'm like, oh yeah, because I followed like the Liam rescue tweet dog guy. But it was really funny, like at the time, that these people were like tracking, like, you know, through the various sort of detective means online, that like Liam was going to be getting this sort of rescue dog and stuff. So he ended up getting it, and he posted a few you know, nice photos and stuff of this dog. But you know, it's lovely, and obviously I think the message there is, you know, getting a rescue dog is a brilliant thing that people can do if they can get a rescue dog rather than paying for a pedigree or whatever, then that's just a great thing. It's cool that someone like Liam is doing that, you know, but it's nice that you know, he's promoted that and doing the you know, and sort of sharing the photos and sharing the message from the sort of the update from the company that dealt with it. I think that was cool.
So one of the most common questions I get is, did Liam just apply like anybody else? And the answer is yes. We have a Google form, which is on a website where people can apply. And I woke up one day and Liam Gallagher had applied to adopt a dog. Obviously, I thought it was my friends winding me up at first, and the occupation said singer. So I definitely thought it was a wind up. But yes, Liam did apply just like anybody else because he liked buttons. Where did buttons come from? So I have a little sanctuary here where we have about 15 dogs, but she just wandered in here one day. Just here was where I saw her for the first time. She actually came from next door. There's like a little migrant family who used to live there. They were workers, they liked her as a puppy, but they just left her. Wasn't cute enough anymore, and they left and went home to wherever, or went on to the next place to work. So Buttons, from the middle of the jungle, just started showing up. So each day she would sneak in a little bit more. It took her about 2 weeks. She was very, very scared of all the other dogs. She was scared of us humans, but she wanted to make a better life for herself. So this is where Buttons first appeared. And after about 2 weeks of literally inviting herself in, she became a permanent fixture. And we then knew we needed to find Buttons a home.
There's been odds and sods, hasn't there? So there's obviously, we're recording on the day that the master plan is released. I know you've kind of thoroughly covered that in previous episodes, but I guess it's kind of worth pointing out. And within that, I think they did a lyric video for Acquiesce, and kind of odds and sods with that on the Oasis front. Noel's released a video for We're Gonna Get There in the End, which is basically a kind of his live shows of the summer. Now, this sort of stuff boils my blood because it's like, well, is it a single? Is it going to be a new single? I think it's probably not. I think it's probably promo for the recently released gig at Withenshaw Park. I think it's probably that, but that's...
Well, it has come up. So I just tweeted about that this morning because it popped up as like an article on Excess Noise or someone. Noel Gallagher releases new single. And I'm like, shit, what? And it's like, We're Going to Get There in the End. I'm like, how is that a new single? You know, uh-huh. And it is physically showing on streaming platforms as like a separate thing, right. But there's no new artwork. There's no, it's basically, there's no B-side other than 7-inch mix. So the original track is 4:15. This version, then there's that. And then there's the 7-inch mix, which is 3:35, I think. So obviously that's kind of like the radio version. So I was just saying there, it's like what this that we talked about before, what is a single? Well, because all it really is it's like it's in a separate place to tap on Spotify now. There's no new artwork. There's no physical release. So I suppose it's a way of getting it into the hands of radios and Spotify playlists. And this is a new single from Noel Gallagher. Get it on your playlist. And that's sort of a way to promote the album. But yeah, it just does feel a bit strange, especially as the demo version was released back in 2020. So it is a strange one.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing is, they said Open the Door, See What You Find was going to be the last single from Council Skies, which I thought was odd at the time. It's like however long it came out, like a few weeks or around about the time of the album. It's like, okay, so you're not, the album's out and that's it, no more singles. I thought that was odd. But then, like, do you count Dead to the World as a single? Probably not, because it got a lyric video. But then, yeah, I mean, ultimately the criteria, my personal criteria now is if it gets a video, if it gets playlisted, which it probably will on Radio X, I'm sure, and ideally a physical version, but obviously none of the singles for Capital Skies have had that, so that kind of goes by the wayside. So it's a little, yeah, it's a very funny one because I had this debate with my friend, and it's like, well, okay, I'm going to settle this. Because I think we were talking about Dead to the World, like, is it single or is it not? And I was like, well, not really. So I went on the website, Noel's website, and I'm like, right, singles. And Dead to the World's not listed on there, but the others from the album are. But then he's also got Come On Outside listed as a single, because that was kind of like the last track to be released from that, from the Blue Moon Rising EP. So it's got that listed as a single. I was like, well, that's not helpful at all. being a purist, I just want to know. So yeah, bit of a funny one. But yeah, I suppose just to sustain the profile, really, isn't it? And obviously he's got his tour coming up, so I guess that will work quite well for that.
Yeah, well, I mean, the press release says, you know, to promote the European tour, which starts this week. So, and then obviously the British leg will come later before the end of the year. So, yeah, and then he's at Wembley Arena, isn't he, just before Christmas, which, you know, is not my favourite venue. It's a bit of a sort of a, yeah, it's I've never really liked it. I prefer it to the O2, to be fair, but yeah.
Yeah, it's that or the O2 in London, though, isn't it, really? I quite like Wembley, and I've got, well, the first time I ever saw races at Wembley Arena, and I spent 17 hours queuing up outside it for tickets, so I've got a kind of a weird fondness for the place. But yeah, I know what you're saying. It's the one of only two we can do in London.
But yeah, also, like, you've been out and about a bit, haven't you? And you've had a I saw some interesting photos. You had a run-in with an Oasis member.
Yes, I went to see Glock, Andy Bell, in Bath last Tuesday, I think. Yeah, it was great. I mean, hopefully a lot of listeners will be familiar with the Glock stuff, but it's very kind of ambient electronic material. So it was a show based around that. It was kind of what used to be called Andy Bell's kind of space station. He's put that to bed, and he's kind of made this Glock thing. It's really kind of hypnotic, great visuals by a guy called Inner Strings. I mean, Bath Moles is a tiny venue, and I think it was kind of, you play kind of correlating kind of size venues. You're probably talking 100 people max, really. I think the venue sizes vary, but I was lucky enough to go to that one. Yeah, the set was great. I'd say if you've been following the Glock stuff, you'll kind of know what to expect. And then had a chat with him afterwards. He was doing signings afterwards. Had a bit of a chat with him. Well, I actually had a chat with him before the gigs. We were watching support. And I turned around and I was like, stood right next to him. I was like, oh, that's Andy Bell. And he was like strapping up his fingers because, you know, he broke his fingers earlier in the year. So I just said, how's the hands? And he kind of gave me a bit of backstory about how he did it, like a really innocuous injury, like he jarred it at home playing with his kids, I think he said. So I had a bit of a chat about that. Then he went off, then had a bit of a chat with him after the gig, because he'd actually reposted the full review of when I saw Ride Support Noel in Taunton back in August. He reposted the whole thing. And I said, you very kindly did that. And he was like, well, the reason I did that, because I wanted acknowledgement that Noel dedicated the master plan to me, because, like, obviously the only people that were there would have seen it. So I was like, oh, yeah, I heard it. And I thought it was a bit odd. How did that come about? He was like, I've no idea. I was just chatting to him before the gig. Normally we didn't mention anything about it. Didn't say that would be happening. I was like, how was it chatting with him? He was fine. He was like, yeah, it was cool. You know, just we're old friends. So it was nice having a chat. But yeah, it was just weird. I wasn't expecting it. And I was like, oh, cool. And then that was kind of it, really, because he was kind of doing signings in, like, I end up chatting to his cousin for a bit longer, so he had like family there, so I kind of wanted to leave him to it. But what, like everyone says, lovely bloke, you know, signed every bit of tap that was going. Someone offered the stage times out, and I was like, I'll have that. He signed that for me. Yeah, just a really nice guy, and yeah, lovely bloke. Got a fanzine, which is quite good, which I think the OCG have kind of got some copies of. Yeah, bloody nice bloke.
Bloody nice bloke.
Bloody nice bloke.
He is a lovely guy, isn't he? And I love the fact he's just out there. You know, I mentioned it when I interviewed Adam from The Music, Adam Nutter. He's a massive star, like Ride, Oasis, played stadiums, and yet he's out there playing to like 100 people because he just loves it. You know what I mean? He just loves it. And you know, I'm sure if he wanted to do he's out doing the Ride and Charlatans double bill across America, isn't he? So, if he wanted to do Ride, or he wanted to do, you know, he could do Andy Bell acoustic and do Oasis and Ride and Hurricane stuff. And I'm sure he would, you know, be doing a lot bigger venues. But yeah, he obviously loves that sort of music. And even if he plays it to 100 people, fine, you know, it's amazing, really. I really respect that.
I don't think he's really comfortable with the singing. He said he sang a couple of tunes, got things. He was like, oh, this is something I'm going to do more and more. But I don't think he's comfortable being like a solo artist, as it were, which, you know, obviously entirely his prerogative. But I think the next thing is there's going to be their new Ride album next year. I think that's where all the focus is going to be. But the way he's going at the moment, I mean, in having this email during this conversation, I've got an email from Bandcamp saying he's just released a whole new load of stuff on there. Now I know what that is. That's CDs he was selling at the gig, and you could get downloads of it if you bought the fanzine. But now it's just gone out. Now the tour's finished, it's just gone out to the public. But I'm sure he'll crop up with lots of other stuff next year. But I think Ride is the focus for 2020.
Yeah.
Cool.
Good stuff. The only other thing I was going to talk to you about that is not necessarily very Oasis related was the Beatles have got a new song out, a kind of a new old song. now and then. So now I've known about this, you know, now and then. It's been talked about over the years. Just the background, people don't know. This was a Lennon demo from the late 70s that when Yoko in the mid 90s gave the remaining Beatles, Free as a Bird, Real Love, and Now and Then. I think there was a fourth track on there as well, actually. But those
Grow
were
Grow Old With Me, I think.
Grow Old With Me. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And then they did Free as a Bird, they did Real Love, but then they just couldn't get Now and Then done. And so they ended up doing little bits and pieces. George recorded some guitar on it, but then it was kind of shelved. And I think George was quoted as saying it was fucking shit.
Yeah, it was the quality of John's voice, essentially. I think that was his issue with it. I've been listening to a lot of documentaries. There's a great BBC Sounds series done by Cup and Nuzzle, podcast series about all eras of the Beatles, but the latest episode's about that. Essentially, it was like, you just couldn't. Once you put the extra instrumentation on, you know, you can. There's a similar kind of thing with Free as a Bird and Real Love. But they're kind of, you know, it's not ideal, and that's kind of what I'm hoping now is they go back and tidy them up. But I think George's thing was, yeah, you just couldn't hear the vocals at all.
Yeah, it's muddy, and also it wasn't finished. You know, there's bits where he's just sort of doodle doing, and it's like because he hadn't finished the song. So, then in the 90s, and they're working on it. And then now with the new technology that Peter Jackson had demonstrated to them on Get Back, that, you know, we can use. I've been interested to see that because when Macca first talked about it, like a year ago or whatever, he sort of said, oh, using AI, and everyone went a bit nuts. Whereas I noticed in the sort of the 12-minute short film they put out, they kept using the term machine learning. So I think obviously AI has got this sort of connotation about it. Whereas if you say machine learning, it basically means the same thing, but it's just, hasn't got that same kind of killer robot kind of feel to it. But yeah, I mean, I listened to it yesterday, and it was just to give you the background, you know, I sort of was like, I was out in that London doing meetings. I couldn't listen to it when it first dropped. I got home. I was like, right, kids, out the room. I want to put it on the TV because in my house, the TV is the thing with the best sound. Put it on and listen to it. And I know the song anyway from the Lennon demo, and also on various sort of podcasts and things, people have done kind of a what this could have been. And, you know, and they've done sort of mock versions of it over the years. And so, to be honest, it wasn't like a complete revelation to me, because I say I've listened to that before. I was a bit underwhelmed. I mean, it was good that the way they separated out that John's vocal, the production I thought was nice. Paul's voice coming in, it's the old man Paul's voice. And so you can't argue with that, because he is an old man and he does sound different now. And I don't mind his voice on like the recent McCartney albums. But yeah, for along with Lennon's voice from his 30s, I just thought, oh, there's Paul's voice coming in. Okay. And overall, the track itself, while I have fleshed it out a bit, it still feels to me like an unfinished demo that's been kind of knocked up a bit and put some nice production on it. The strings I think are great, the bass, the guitar is nice and stuff, but it actually reminded me of what I often complain about with Liam Gallagher songs or with like BDI songs, is that it often feels like it's a verse and a chorus, and then they'll do like an extra bit, and then they'll sort of pad it out for like 4 minutes, as opposed to like a Noel Gallagher song, which has normally got four different sections with all different melody, and then it, you know, and it's fantastic. Whereas I just think it left me feeling a little bit flat.
Okay, I mean, I've heard a version on YouTube years ago, like 10, 12 years ago, which I was working on the impression was the 94 version. So like you, I knew the song. And I think for me, like my when it was played on the radio last night, or sorry, yesterday, I listened to it, you know, listened to it live and all that sort of stuff. And I genuinely had goosebumps when Lennon's voice came out. Like, it was genuinely really, really kind of moved by it. But the points you kind of make, yeah, it is that thing. Is it the Beatles? It's like the Beatles later in life. I mean, my wife said to me this morning, we were listening to it, it was on the radio. She was like, that doesn't sound like John Lennon. I was like, well, she's not, you know, she's not a Beatles fan or a John Lennon fan. I was like, interesting. And I thought maybe it's because it's late 70s Lennon, you know, or, you know, in his late 30s, when, you know, she wouldn't necessarily be familiar with it, because to me, it's John Lennon. But, you know, being a fan, I also know a lot more about him. The old man Paul thing, yeah, I kind of see that. But I think it's just the kind of the sadness of it, really, and the kind of melancholy. And what is it apparently John's last words to Paul? Was like, think of me now and then, you know. And if we're knowing stuff like that and add the kind of weight to it, there is a kind of real melancholia to it. But I guess it was so hyped, you know, the final Beatles song got a week's notice of it. I think they always ran that risk of it being a bit potentially being underwhelming. I think. Yeah, I like the fact it's not Jeff Lynne, like for his real love of work. I like the fact they kind of, the drums aren't quite so noisy, I guess. Not noisy, but they sound differently. They haven't got that kind of Jeff Lynne spin. So I do really like that. I must admit, every time I hear it, I like it more. I will say that.
Okay.
It's just nice to have new Beatles stuff out there, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I agree. And maybe it will grow on me over time. Like, but I think maybe it was just the hype and everything. I mean, it is amazing what they've been able to do. We'll see how it grows over time. But the video, I think, should be dropping shortly. I think the video drops at 3, I think.
I've got to say, I do find it quite amusing that when the Rolling Stones released their best album in 40 years, and it's fucking great, by the way. It's outrageously good. It has no right to be as good as it is. Hackney Diamonds. Bite My Head Off with Macca on bass is just... it's blown my mind. But it's quite, just think it's quite funny that, you know, that the Stones are really done over by the Beatles yet again. You know, we're 50 years on or 40 years on or whatever, or 60 years on. The Beatles come along and go, yeah, well done. You've added a little album. Well done. You've added a bit of Renaissance. By the way, we're the Beatles. So we're going to be completely whipping that carpet from underneath you. Who'd have thunk it? 2023, you've got the Beatles and Stones releasing new material, both of which not as good as their peak, but certainly, you know, are a credit to the catalogues, I would say. I just think that's hilarious. I just think, you imagine Jagger must be like,
you bastards. Yeah. Although, what was the quote like, you know, you know what the Stones are going to do, just look at what the Beatles did 6 months ago. Maybe they'll come out with, they'll re-envision a lost demo from 1972.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? The floodgates are open now. Now the technology's out there, you're going to be getting, you know, new Bowie stuff, you're going to be getting new Stone stuff, you might be getting, you know, new Nirvana stuff, you know, or whatever. It's going to be, I'm not a big, you know, big fan of AI generally, as you know, but I think if they can do this, then yeah, it's going to be, I mean, it's not going to help the nostalgia market. Those who complain about the nostalgia market kind of flooding the music market, mm-hmm. That's not going to help that. But, you know, if we get new Bowie material, I'm all for it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Cool. All right, mate. Well, look, what have you got anything coming up? Any gigs or anything?
don't think. Well, Prodigy next month in Cardiff. Well, sorry, this month. We're in November now. What else? I'm planning. I'm probably going to go to the Knowles Arena tour. But no, it's kind of getting to that time of year now where kind of the end of year write ups go on to be like a lot of album of the year things. So I was probably spending a lot of time writing them. And yeah, just gorging on the best ofs and like the Johnny Marr best of and Richard Hawley's best of and stuff like that. So yeah, I can't think of anything particularly exciting.
And what was that, the football thing you wrote recently on the Substack?
Yeah, that was for, so I was approached by, he's a friend of the podcast. I think he's listening, perhaps Patrick Ridge. He's an Evertonian, so he's clearly salt of the earth chap. And he approached me and said, look, I've just got this Substack going on. I'm looking for guest writers. Would you be interested in writing something about music and football? So I did it was quite long, ended up being, what, two pieces, about 4,000 words in total, kind of about the historic ties that bind, which is the name of the article, between music and football. So starting with the Beatles, I kind of like tied it in with, you know, Paul McCartney's apparently an Evertonian. And then going on, like, through that from like George Best through, you know, through the 90s, through Britpop and Euro 96 and that kind of stuff. And yeah, it was really good, really, really fun to write, actually. Really good, really good. Because one of those where you kind of, you're thinking of that, and you think, oh, we have that as well. And you've got Elton John buying Watford and Bell being chairman of Watford and stuff like that. So it's kind of, yeah, it's a really good, fun piece. It's on my social media post if anyone wants to read it. But I'd recommend, if you're a football fan, going on the More Than a Game Substack it is, because there's loads, you know, if you sign up to newsletter, you'll see the articles get published on there. And yeah, it's a really good, you know, it's a kind of fan-led football fanzine, really. So it's a football magazine, really, doing it as a service. So yeah, loved writing it. And yeah, I'd recommend it for football fans to check it out, check out the Substack as a whole.
Cool. No, you did do some promotion, although I had to actually remember myself because you wouldn't have remembered.
Nah, once it's written, it's gone. That's all I can say. It's out of my head. Don't need to worry about it anymore.
Gone, and on to the next one. All right. Well, look, thank you very much for your time, Richard. A pleasure to catch up, as always. And yeah, we'll see you soon.
Likewise. Cheers, JC.
Well, some of the crowd are on the pitch.
Okay, so thank you very much to Richard for coming on. Always a pleasure to catch up with him. I just wanted to jump back in here because I posted on Twitter when we were talking about the best books about Oasis and why. And I did say on there that I would read out some responses, and then I didn't when I was talking to Richard. So it's only fair. Let's give some people a shout out for those who replied on Twitter or X. I'm not going to call it X. I'm just going to keep going on Twitter. You can do one. Dennis Elstra said, always thought this is really good. And he put a picture there of Take Me There, Oasis the Story by Paul Mather, as we discussed. One thing I didn't mention there is actually that has got introductions by Noel and Liam Gallagher. So you can't argue with that. Kaz, who the author of Get on the Roller Coaster, Oasis in New Zealand, mentioned Modern Music Masters by Tom Boniface Webb, which is the one that Richard mentioned as being part of that same series. Michael Hart from Australia said that 33 and a third book is some of the best Oasis analysis out there. Nick Johnson gives a shout to What's the Story by Ian Robertson. He says, quite the read about life on the road with the boys, and if anyone can testify about that, it's Ian. Britpop Memories said, I'd want to give a shout out to Paul Lester's book he did for Melody Maker in 1995. It was the first book about Oasis that I bought, and it was my Oasis Bible for years. Covers the basic story and the early days. Great photos too. There we go. Yeah, so that was like a Melody Maker tie-in, Oasis, the illustrated story. Shazza Charlotte, this is interesting. She says, I love the book by Benjamin Durand and Nico Pratt,
who has been tagged. It looks like his name is actually Nico Pratt. I thought it might be short for something. It's a French book. It perfectly describes the story of the Gallagher brothers and what they were destined for if they hadn't become rock stars. It also helps to make everyone realise that no, Oasis are not an overrated band. And it's called Oasis ou la Revanche des Ploucs. So yeah, sounds interesting. Billy Bright says Supersonic, Some Might Say by Richard Bowes, Tony McCarroll's and both of Paulo Hewitt's, Jill Fermanowski's Nebworth, Ian Robertson's and Where Did It All Go Wrong by Nick Amis. Actually, that's one we didn't mention in the show, actually. Nick Amis at least did something different. He did come on very early days of the pod, where he did Where Did It All Go Wrong, which was very much focused on Standing on the Shoulder of Giants era, which is a really interesting era to focus on. So, I think he gets another shout as well. Al Fagan says Forever the People by Paulo Hewitt. Feels like you're right there with him and the whole band. Snapshot in time of the madness and chaos of that BNL tour. Lee Cardoso says, I love those two written by Paulo. They would be great movies, but the only one that tells the story until the last days is Your Some Might Say. Well, thank you very much. Andrew Rooney says, Richard Bowes' book, Easy. I think that might be the Andrew Rooney that we've mentioned is doing his own book, so I don't know. I'll have to give him a shout. The Andersons said, Getting High is the best written book, simply put. It also gives great insight into the Gallaghers through backstory and family history. Some fantastic anecdotes as well. Stella Echoes said, Enjoyed both books by Paulo Hewitt, but preferred Forever the People from memory. The insight into touring, both good and bad, highs and not so highs of their life at the time. Owen Ling said, I'll go with Tony's autobio. Yeah, he makes some pot shots at Nolan Gwigsy, but he brings the early years to life so vividly, bringing a more honest voice to the proceedings that's more pleasant than many of the mythologized accounts Noel has spun over time. Wardy said, really can't decide on this. Think I've read most of them. Supersonic for the interviews. Paul Mather's book is great. Both by Paulo Hewitt. The Bookazines by Mojo, Uncut and Q. But go on, because it covers everything, I'll say Some Might Say by RB Music Writer. That's Richard Bowes. A great read. Maura Donahoe said, Paulo Hewitt, Getting High is the best I've read. Tender is the Night, who is at men_nowhere, says Brothers from Oasis to Childhood by Paul Gallagher, released in 96 after Nebworth, before Be Here Now, a great insight into their upbringing and family dynamic from the third brother, but also a reminder of a time when Oasis really were the biggest band since the Beatles. Canorous Oscillation says Andy Riley's Definitely Maybe, a wide-eyed look back from a fan falling in love with a band and music as it unfolded around him. Yeah, I'll have to check that out and check if that is the Andy Riley that listens to the pod. Flemo 1983, not directly about Oasis, but The Last Party by John Harris is a great read. That and the Creation record story, My Magpie Eyes Are Hungry for the Prize. Stannis Stan says, I really like Tony's book. It gives a counter to the normal narrative about Oasis, which for me suggests the truth is somewhere in between. Yeah, that's probably about right. JLC at LBDG says, not exactly about Oasis, but has a few references, including a time traveller teaching whatever to his father in 1969, helping him turn into a folk rock star. To make this plug less shameful, limited time free download link. Ah, and it's a book called A Rock and Roll Time Travel Tale. Interesting. I'll drop a link in the description of this episode if you want to check that out further. Timely Persuasion, a novel by J.L. Civi? C-I-V-I, it looks like. There we go. WJM, Will Martin, McCarroll's autobiography, still the best in my opinion, written by someone who could genuinely say he was there. It's ghostwritten, obviously, but that's a good thing. Dwar La has another shout for Forever the People by Paulo Hewitt. He says it's the quintessential Oasis book. There honestly should be more books or documentaries made about the whole Be Here Now period. Chris at Crimbo 1888 says Tony McCarroll book the best. Steve Spithray, Ian Robertson's book is a snapshot of a band on the cusp of greatness, but also at the brink of a drug-fueled abyss. It reads as wild as it probably was. Russell Osborne says, maybe not the best, but was one of my first. It's by Gemma Wheeler. It's called Oasis, How Does It Feel? It's one of those early ones. Dan Boyton said, I liked Oasis, The Truth by Tony McCarroll. Whilst it was obviously driven by a lot of bitterness, you did get the sense that a lot of it was based in some truth. Found the stuff about Noel's feelings towards his Irish heritage interesting. Paints a picture of a tortured soul. Paul Bustin says, Some Might Say by the mighty RB music writer, without a doubt. Joseph Burns, I love Tony McCarroll's, a brilliant, funny read. High Flying Birds, who is at pcross125, says definitely maybe 33 and a third by Alex Niven. It's a small paperback, but this series of books really goes deep into the time because it's focused on the best album of all time. Tell me I'm wrong, I'll fight you. It really goes deep. So good. David Harris, anything Paolo Hewitt or John Harris's book on Britpop. Phrase Downs, FDog79 says Paolo Hewitt getting high from the 90s was great. Brian McVeigh said Supersonic is excellent, just like the film, a right laugh. And that is it. So so thank you to everyone who commented, and I hope you got a shout out. That will do it for today. As you heard on there, next thing I'm going to be digging a little bit more into books, because I'll be talking to Kaz about the New Zealand book Get on the Roller Coaster very shortly, so that will be the next episode. Stop the Clocks, we've had a new music submission come in. This is from the band New Rebel Cult. We featured them a few years ago, really good single, and they are back again. Sent them a nice little message and the track, so
Hi, this is Niall, the guitarist from New Rebel Cult, and we've just released a new single called To Be In The Right Mind. It's available now on all streaming platforms, and you can follow us on all socials at New Rebel Cult. Cheers, James, for having us on the podcast once again, mate. It's much appreciated. This is To Be In The Right Mind.
Yeah, really like that. Well done, guys. I think you sort of went quiet over COVID, but are back again. So, yeah, good to have you back. And if you guys want to find out more about the band, then links are in the description of this episode. And if any of you want to submit music, I'm always happy to play new music as long as it's good. Just drop me an email, oasispod@gmail.com. So, thank you very much for listening. Most of all, thanks go to our patrons. You can become a patron at patreon.com/oasispod. Which is where we post bonus episodes. Episodes go up early, and you can also qualify for free gifts. I'm going to be doing the Christmas free gift very shortly. So if you haven't become a patron before and you wanted to jump in quickly and qualify for that, that would probably be a clever time to do it. Do give us a follow on social media, YouTube, all the usual places. And until next time, stay in touch, stay engaged, and stay young.